When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People down in Florida can't be still when old Lynyrd Skynyrd's picking down in Jacksonville. People down in Georgia come from near and far to hear Richard Best picking on that red guitar.
I went to my baby's house and I sat down on a step. She said,
let's see it.
The All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a southern storm of bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast. Jason is here with us. What's going on?
I am here with you, and I'm ready for a good summer music, Brian. I know you are, too. You got a lot of good shows coming up here.
I do.
What are you excited about?
For sure. Government Meal this Sunday. Let's start with that. And we always need to mention that we are now on Pantheon Podcast, and I'm looking at the stats right now. There's some of their best shows. Ugly American Werewolf in London, Imbalance History, and Shouted Out Loud Podcast.
Yes, and Mistress Carrie had somebody on this week. I can't remember. It was a good guest. Was it one of the guys from Extreme? I don't remember, but anyways, we're on a great roster. You like us, check everybody else out.
Right on. How was the Faster Pussycat show?
The Faster Pussycat show was good. It was on a Monday night in Columbus. Not always a great night to have a show Monday, but the club was pretty well filled. I got a chance to talk to Sam, who we've had on the podcast. You know, he plays guitar for Dorothy, plays guitar for Faster Pussycat. That was nice. There's an opener, for those of you who may know, if you've listened to our podcast, Jason Charles Miller, who's like a harder rock version of Blackberry Smoke. And in fact, he was one of the co-songwriters on Old Scarecrow, along with Ricky Medlock and Charlie Starr on the You Hear Georgia album, Brian.
That's awesome. We're going to have to try and get him on.
I like the band. It really was. It was like hard rock Blackberry Smoke. So hard Southern rock. They were really, really good. I was impressed by them.
Well, I'll definitely have to check them out. I haven't got a chance to listen to anything yet, but I definitely will.
Yeah, and Faster Pussycat sounded great. Sam played well. Like Tammy sound, the band sounded good. I was never a huge Faster Pussycat fan. I liked some of their songs and stuff, but that was never one of the bands. But I'll tell you what, Brian, they sounded good, and it's just fun. It's fun rock and roll. Like, you smile while you're there the whole time because it's nothing but good vibes, and I miss that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of surprising, because you just reminded me to bring something up. Sometimes, you know, there might be a band or something that you're not really into, and I'll go to a show, or you go to a show and you tend to just go, wow, this band is fun. It's loud guitar, but just, although it's not in our genre, my wife's a big fan of Lit, and they played at the Rib Fest. And they're a fun band, you know.
I mean,
I wouldn't go travel to see them.
It's like eating bag of Doritos.
Like if you see a band at a festival or something, and you go, well, I'll watch them, you know.
It's like junk food. It's like when you eat Doritos, it's like the Doritos taste good. It's not necessarily good for me before or after whatever, but like I enjoyed the experience. Yeah. But they sounded really good. It's a two guitar band, and they trade leads, and they did a cool extended intro to House of Pain, which was really nice. And like I said, I was about an hour and a half of me standing around with a smile on my face, just enjoying fun, no frills, rock and roll. And thanks for Sam for hooking up with a ticket and talking to me. And it was a good time. I actually went by myself.
Okay.
I was there by myself. Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, we had some guests lined up previously for this week, or we didn't necessarily have someone locked in, but we'll get someone in. And so this person's not available, that person's not available. But we got an old friend that is available, was available, and always a good time to talk to Mr. Matt Wake.
Yeah, Matt is... You guys know Brian and I are fans of, but man, he writes for all sorts of outlets, AL.com, Guitar World, Guitar Player, Metal Edge now. And he has, honest to God, had some of my favorite stories of the year. And it might not always be somebody or a subject I might be super interested in, but he does a great job when you read the stories, and it's always good. So, Brian, we hadn't talked to Matt in a while. It was good to have him on and just have a podcast where we just shoot the shit with somebody that likes music.
Yeah, I want to have a series of podcasts talking about whatever with whoever.
Yep.
So we just
Of my favorite, because we always interview people, which is great, and find out about people, but just hanging out without really a script.
Talking about whatever with Matt Wake, and you guys will hear that right now. Segment of the podcast, and we just kind of had some previous people that we thought were going to be on, and that just kind of didn't come to fruition. But we got a great friend to come in tonight, and we're gonna have a great chat here. Jason,
the guy coming in to bat cleanup for us, and I'll tell you what, it is a friend of ours, somebody I love reading his stuff and following him on social media. And I'm gonna use a quote of somebody else. I'm gonna quote Katie Heron, aka McQueen from the Dead Deads, and say, he's a super cool dude. So back with us, journalist extraordinaire Matt Wake. What's going on, Matt?
What's up, man? Stoked to see you guys. Stoked to talk music with you guys. And I'll take a compliment from Katie Heron. She's a cool cat, great drummer.
How's everything in Huntsville?
Things are good in Huntsville, where Katie is from also. The Orion Amphitheater is bringing in a lot of good shows. So that's fun, you know, because when the show comes to you, then all of a sudden you're not paying for a hotel for 2 hours or 3 hours of gas each way. I can eat at my house and sleep in my own bed. It's like, it chops it from like here to here in cost. So it's pretty cool.
You can afford to buy the shirt when you go to a show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of merch, I brought this because to show you guys, it's my favorite piece of non-clothing rock merch I have. It's a Greg Allman.
Oh, koozie. Wow. I'm No Angel. Yeah, nice. That was a big hit there in the 80s.
Yeah. So it's got a sparkling ginger water from Whole Foods in there. So there's only one way.
Sparkling ginger water from Whole Foods. Like, that's kind of yuppie.
It's rock and roll. Sparkling water. Come
on. Sparkling water from Whole Foods in a Greg Allman koozie.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what rock and roll is now. What is rock? Like, you are no lie, I'm not saying this because we're friends, but one of the best, not one of the best rock journalists going right now. And that's one why we're excited to talk to you. Like, you just knock it out of the park with all your subjects, all your interviews. So, dude, what's going on in rock? Like, what is rock?
I think, you know, there's a lot of good things happening in rock, and from some really, you know, the tour with Aerosmith and the Crows, I think that'll be really exciting. Once that gets going, I think that'll have a lot of buzz. I think there's as you guys do a great job of promoting up and coming bands, I think the ones doing it now, they're not doing it. It's all because they love it, because they could make more money elsewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Dirty Honey just finished their second album.
Saw that.
That's exciting. There's always new, like somebody sent me on Twitter, sent me a clip of this band from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The Sweat. And I've never heard of them. They're a young band. They have only have like 650 followers on Facebook. Really good. It sounded like Nancy Wilson, a young Nancy Wilson, but more of a from heart, but more of a power pop kind of sound, like the Raspberries, or a little less classic rock. But I was like, wow, these are great. And I'd never heard of it. So I think new stuff bubbling up.
Do you think, I mean, you're talking to a lot of great people, from established acts to up and coming stuff. Are you seeing like a change in landscape where rock's becoming a little bit more mainstream cool?
I think something that is cool about, I think it's kind of cool that rock has an outsider kind of, you know, thing that's really back, I think. Whereas, like, obviously the income and all the different, there's more money for the bands, even to like the rock writers when rock is in the mainstream. But there is kind of that outlaw edge when it's out of the mainstream. And like I said before, the people that are doing it now are, they're doing it because they love this music. I think it's one or two things from getting really big in the mainstream again. I think there's such a push in, some people are going to like music like K-pop, or, you know, the Latin pop, or, you know, Taylor Swift, or all. But I think there's going to, that stuff is so pushed right now because of the clicks. That's what, you know, derives major media, what they cover. And like, they've pretty much dropped rock, don't give any new rock, real rock coverage, or they have a list of people who check the right boxes that they'll still cover. But another really big sensation of a streaming show like a Stranger Things, and they really use all rock, you know, little things could like push a little more.
Or, well, we saw Master of Puppets, right? This latest Stranger Things, right? All of a sudden Master of Puppets is everywhere.
Great example. And I think even if, like, I'm not a fan of her, I appreciate how hard she's worked, although to me, she sings like someone who's never struggled to pay rent, is Taylor Swift, you know, but like,
because she hasn't.
And hey, I wish that is my case. But she's worked her ass off.
Right.
She
writes her own music, right? Like, you can appreciate
she
that.
She has a lot of co-writers, my understanding, for some of that stuff. But, I respect her work ethic and what she's been able to build up. But if she did like a rock album, or like Beyonce did a rock album, then all of us, you know, and again, I'm not a fan of Beyonce. Her voice doesn't do anything for me. I've like lots of R&B singers, but it's just not special to me personally, but I'm on the outside. There are people think I'm nuts for liking some of the bands I like, but you know, I don't know. But you get someone like that, that tilts the paradigm, I think, if they did a rock album. But to be honest with you, these bands are making good money on the road, I think. I think the smart ones have figured out how to make a good living
outside. Oh, and I know, Brian, you've got a question. I'm going to cut you off real fast, so I apologize. But we were just talking, and Brian was saying, hey, you got that new amphitheater in Huntsville. I don't think if there's not a demand for live music and real people playing stuff, you're not getting to Huntsville or these other places that are going to make these venues, right?
It's a business, man. You're exactly right.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
When you guys mentioned Stranger Things, I immediately thought of Yellowstone, which, of course, Blackberry Smoke has music on there. Whiskey Myers has music on there. Lainey Wilson.
Cool.
I could talk about a little bit. And Whiskey Myers is playing up here about 80 miles north. And I'm going to go to that. And they're playing this place called the Alera Center, which it's not quite the size of like your typical arena, but a little bit less than that. And I'm like, but I'm looking at their tour schedule, and those guys are playing arenas, like, and even Blackberry Smoke plays theaters and sheds and stuff, but Whiskey Myers is playing arenas, and they play up here, and people know who they are, which is great.
They're not on mainstream radio at all, right, Brian?
Like, I don't know if they're, well, see, I can't speak on behalf of country FM radio. I know, like, both of them and Blackberry Smoke have been, you know, shown a lot on, I think a lot on CMT. So it's like this thing where it's like, I almost like do I have to give some credit to FM country radio, where we always talk about FM rock radio as just like dropped the ball decades ago.
And you know, and people are playing the game a little more, like the Crows doing the stuff with Darius Rucker, you know, who's, yeah, become a country star.
Yep.
And that's something they would have been like back in the 90s or even 2000 would have been like, F that, man. But now they're like, and I think, you know, I think you're seeing the smarter people figure it out, because they have no choice not to.
So Brian said 2 interesting things. First and foremost, I can't believe there's something 80 miles north of you in Fargo, North Dakota, and they still have Civilization and arenas to play somewhere. So I'm baffled by that. I figured that was Canada. And going back to the rock radio or the FM radio, country radio, Matt, I'm going to throw this at you. Is like, where do you think country music fits in with rock? And like he named Whiskey Myers and Blackberry Smokes, which are these rock acts with country. But is country radio the new rock radio, I guess?
You know, I, to be honest, I would be offering a total drive-by opinion on that.
So you're not listening to a lot of country radio?
I don't.
Me either. That's what I was hoping you would know.
I don't. But hey, I do have, you know, I mean, I think, you know, as far as rock radio goes, I have some friends who work in, I guess, more of a modern rock station. I know a couple of people at a classic rock station. I think the interesting thing for me there is I think the modern rock helps, you know, baby bands pretty good. You know, like if Dirty Honey's coming in town, they'll work their music. Or and also the inherently thing interesting about classic rock is they keep, you know, they shift. I did a story on it years and years and years ago about there's a thing they figure out what's classic rock. Okay, we'll play stuff that was big when people who are now between these ages or born in these years were 18 to or whatever. They have a formula for it. So like that's why, like, okay, it used to just be like Bad Company and Boston and Zeppelin or whatever, and then it went to like Guns N' Roses, and then it went to Nirvana. And now you're starting to hear like Green Day on classic rock. And, you know,
and I don't like that, to be honest with you.
Stripes on classic rock.
And that, I think that the three of us, we're all various ages, but close enough together where that I don't think any of us like that feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. The next stop, though, would be like the oldies station.
Oh, God help
me. That's when you're in trouble, when you're
Led Zeppelin playing on the oldies channel. If that happens, I don't know if I can take that.
If the soundtrack of my youth is on the oldies station, there's no escaping what that means, bro.
It kind of makes you sad, to be honest with you.
I want to keep on this discussion of FM radio, and you might not have the answers, whatever, but like I always get, like, in one way, I don't really care. And I'll reference interview that I was reading with Charlie Starr and Britt and Richard Turner. I think they all did this. They were separate on there, but they all said like, well, our fans, they're not going to care if that we're not on FM radio, but like, why, you know, especially up here, like there's actually people who don't know who Blackberry Smoke is or Whiskey Myers, even though there are some like, why aren't they all over the radio? And even then I'll go to the next, what I consider the next lower rung of Southern rock. It's like the Georgia Thunderbolts and Them Dirty Roses. Like, why aren't they all over the radio? Like, at what point did FM radio, you know, get into these formulas that you were talking about? It seems like since Foo Fighters came out, I'm struggling to find another rock band that's come out since then and that has stayed on FM radio. You know, I mean, there was Jet out of Australia, they broke up. Velvet Revolver broke up. There was a band called Taddy Porter that's stayed together, but they went from a typical like almost like a Cry of Love kind of sound to like Jefferson Airplane, and now they're coming back to that kind of rock thing. And so I you like, what do you understand that more, Matt, what their formulas are based on? And even though there's these songs that are like should be on FM radio, that they're just like they shun certain stuff.
You know, I don't have the inside view or have written about that nature of radio that I can recall, but what I do think off of that is two things. One, bands like Blackberry Smoke, who have, you know, they've had some notoriety, but they're also good enough, they have good management and good other things where they work their social media right, they talk to the right, you know, podcast or what. They know they've adjusted to the adapt or die. Like, they've adjusted to reaching their fans through social media, through podcasts, through the avenues they do have good enough. And it's, you know, they keep their fans. So there's fan retention. And the other thing I think that would be interesting there is that, I guess that would be kind of like, I think they've kind of, but the result of that is there's kind of been a vast fall off in people, bands added to household name level status. Like, who after Foo Fighters?
Right. Which has been the biggest band come out since like 2000. I know the Foo Fighters came out like 95 or whatever, but I mean, like, honestly, what's the biggest new band? You cover a lot of stuff through Guitar World and AL.com and all this other, like, what's the big band that's come out?
I mean,
is it still the Foo Fighters?
It wasn't like Kings of Leon was doing good for a while.
They were, Red of Van Fleet sells out arenas, man. Mm. And those guys are in their mid-20s. Yeah. So, but I don't think, like, do I think if I said, hey, what about Josh Kiszkut? Just like, to people who aren't fans.
Right. Yeah.
So I think there's been a fan efficiency, I think, of the good, you know, bands of the waves after kind of that mainstream household era thing, like that they've gotten very efficient with, you know, but I don't know how many casual fans a lot of these bands have. I think a lot of the fans are fans.
So I think Brian's getting to a good point, and let's see if you can corroborate this, but like FM radio is not really an indicator these days, or maybe not as necessary to make a living doing live rock music.
I mean, people have figured it out. I'm sure it's such a huge tool for some bands, you know, like I think of a band like Dorothy or, you know, even, you know, I know, you know, Godsmack is a while back, but, you know, they've rung up, had a long thing of hits, you know, on rock.
And Dorothy gets played on rock radio all over the place. But I tell you what, Matt, when I've seen her, it's been in smaller venues. I know she was just part of the Sonic Slam Festival in Columbus, like that big multi-day thing. But when I saw her last summer, she was in a 600-seat club.
Yeah, I think the last time she was here, she was in a big club. But, you know, and who knows? I'm sure she's making a good living too, though. So, yeah, I haven't done an in-depth deep dive on the relation in 2023 to and how integral radio play. I think there are different ways to make be a success.
Well, I think you said it earlier. It's like they learn to play the game, and you use BlackBerry Smoke as a example. Good management works for social media. I think that's the evolution in like survival of the fittest is you figure out, because rock radio is not going to play you, like the Brian's point. It's the same 15 bands and the same 30 songs. How you go out and make a living playing rock music is a lot different than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah. And a lot of these, you know, and we're talking touring level at a certain level.
Yeah.
They're a lot smarter with their merch. They do a lot better merch. The
meet and greets before shows, right? Like pay money to go meet your band. Yeah.
Boom. It's like, I met a singer for a rock band we all love before, and he was a total dick and went out of his way to be a dick. And I had written some really nice things about him when a lot of people weren't writing a lot of nice things about him. And then,
can we guess?
Let's not. And then, so another friend of ours met this person at a meet and greet, and he was like, man, he was so cool. I was like, how much? And I'm thinking, how much did you pay for the meet and greet? And he was like, he was so psyched I had bought this box set of his solo band. I was like, how much? Okay, so let's add up, you know, the box set and the meet and greet. And you're like, he gave me a chest bump. Well, that's how much your chest bump costs. The price of a VIP and a box set. So,
yeah.
But, yeah.
My last question about FM radio is I want to know, down in the South where you're at, or any, you know, this Georgia or, you know, Tennessee, whatever, is it different from your typical FM station? And I'll premise it by saying a couple of things, like some of the bands, the newer Southern rock kind of bands that we talk to, we'll hear like, well, they played our song. I know it's certainly in Kentucky, we know that FM radio is cool. And Greg Martin's got a show, and Steve Jewell did have a show. And I think
Han Solo, Frozen and Carbonite.
Boone had a show or does have a show or whatever, but like, this goes with the story, so bear with me. But like in 2014, late fall 2014, I drove out to California, and between Grand Forks or between Fargo, North Dakota, and Salt Lake City, it was just like desolate, but a lot of that was driving through South Dakota, Wyoming.
But nobody lives but there though.
KLOS out in Los Angeles was the exact same playlist as like KJ108 in Grand Forks, which is that town 80 miles north here. So FM radio down south, is it the same as every other FM station, or do they actually tap into some of these southern bands?
Okay. Now my listening of radio in the car isn't as intensive as it used to be,
right.
But when I did live in New Orleans for a couple of years, I noticed, like, for example, the classic rock station there that still played, you know, Led Zeppelin, but they would play like The Song Remains the Same instead of, you know,
they would expand the catalog. Yeah.
Here, what I've noticed is just that, you know, the, like we talked about earlier, it's freaking the White Stripes and Green Day on classic rock. So
God help us all.
I wish I had more, my finger more in the radio.
Right.
Well, kind of turn it around. So, you know, you do rock journalism, music journalism, entertainment journalism. So how do you stay on top or find about music? Is it because your editor, somebody gives you an assignment, or like, are you active seeking out bands, and like, how do you do that?
You know, social media is both the problem and the solution, and for a lot of things in life, but,
true.
that's how you tell. That's how the buzz often, you know, someone that you respect their opinion posts about a band, whether it's you guys or, you know, other people that I trust their opinion, whether they're higher up the rung than me or maybe somewhere else. I'll have friends text me sometimes, or, you know, I'm on the email list for a shitload of publicists. So that can become a deluge, the publicists. Yeah.
Here's a press release. Come here to listen to the new album and the new single. Like, Brian and I get that stuff now too.
Of course, sure, I bet. And
not as much as you, but we get it. And it's a lot. Like, there's a lot to keep up with.
But if you look at those instead of just delete them all, sometimes you'll find something like, and, you know, there's some art to that, like being able to have the right reference points to draw in people. So a lot of it's that, or I'm trying to think. Yeah, those would probably be a lot of the ways, you know.
Yeah, personal anecdote for me on that is exactly right. And I've told this story on the podcast before, so listeners, you know, I apologize, but one of my favorite bands going right now is the Cold Stairs. And
yeah, that's how I found out about them.
Yeah, from listening, but it's word of mouth. I would not know anything about the Cold Stairs as if we weren't asked, I think it was who was it? It was Blackstone Cherry's management, Brian, to see if we could have Chris on to talk about the new record. I'd never heard of these guys. Talk to Chris. Somebody did. Talk to Chris. He was cool as shit. I checked out that music, that Heavy Shoes album. I'm like, this is good. And like, checked out their back catalog. Loved them. But man, I would not known about this band that I love so much right now if I wasn't on a podcast that just, you know, had somebody on.
Yeah. And you touched on another thing. Like, if a known manager or someone that you know works with a band you like or a cool band, they pick up a new younger band, you're like, I can't remember if I was already hip to Dirty Honey by the time I heard that they had the same management as the Crows, but I was like, and little things like that. But remember,
makes sense that they would play together regardless of the relationship with the manager.
Totally. And that's another thing, like, and I think this was more prevalent, you know, when we were coming up as rock fans and young dudes, or young rock fans, a lot of the baby bands would get taken out as openers, you know, and some bands brought out some really cool ones, you know, so I see some of that, but not as much now.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing. And Brian and I, we have our thing is like, we don't turn anybody down and say no. We might push a couple months down the road, but like, our thing is introducing a lot of new music or celebrating the stuff that we already like. And it's very disappointing and sad that most people don't get a chance to get exposed to the really good music. We are very fortunate doing what we do. We hear a lot of this new stuff and can find this cool stuff and try to share it with people. But man, there are not a lot of good ways, platforms to do that. And I think you're right. Like, going back to the question I asked you, is like social media, people recommending stuff, because you cannot count on the radio thing anymore. It's word of mouth. It's kind of like the old school days, word of mouth. Somebody's got a tape, somebody's got a bootleg, check them out.
Yeah. And they're like Jay Scott, his podcast does a great
job. Yep. Guys, they always do a new music spotlight. Yep.
I've learned from you guys, learned stuff from Jay. And it's, you know, kind of basic, but on Spotify, fans of this artist also like, I've found some pretty cool stuff from that.
That's what you do, Brian, right? It's like you listen to this and like you might also like this band.
Yeah, I've come across a lot of bands that way.
Brian's a good talent scout. Like you should have been the guy back in the 80s who was signing bands, because you pick up some really good stuff.
Yeah, A&R, Brian.
Well, I mean, that I'll just mention quick on that, around that time, you know, like up here, like we always get something that's popular delayed like a year, year and a half, whatever. But like when Motley Crue and Rat and everything, they were really big, I was looking for bands that weren't as well known, you know, those like Black and Blue and Rough Cut, Keel, Armored Saint, you know. So and that was like probably in Hit Parade or magazines, you see the smaller story or whatever, and I read through that like, who are these guys, they look cool or whatever. So it's just about just being drawn to what else.
You're an underdog guy, that's what you are. You like the underdog.
Well, this could be a good segue in another question, Matt, and I don't know how much enlightenment you have on this, but like I always joke on our Facebook page that I'm not a promoter, but I play one, you know, in my head, whatever. I feel like I would be good at like putting a show together, because, and I know maybe part of it is they want, people want their festivals to be a little more diverse, but like, why isn't there a festival? Like I was joking earlier today, like there should be like Blackberry Smoke should take the You Hear Georgia theme up, but with like Larkin Poe and the Georgia Thunderbolts,
Georgia bands, the road,
you know, so do you have any insight into how festivals are put together, or why I guess from my viewpoint, I look at it, I see like the lineups could be better. Although I will say one other thing before you answer, if you have an answer, is that these festivals like Born and Raised and like Firewater, there's one other one that's name is escaping my head, but like now we see like Southern rock or bluesy rock being at the same festivals as country music, but authentic or outlaw original kind of country music. So are some of those lanes being broken down? That could be a second question, like, because everything for many years going back younger, everything was stuck into lanes. Like you couldn't have like,
you know, everything kind of crosses over, it's more of a broader,
yeah. So in my, I don't know, maybe I'm like just kind of like canceling out my own point, where it's like before, like festivals were just genre-fied, and I'm wondering why it's not like that now. But then I think it's cool that now we're finding the connections again between Southern rock, blues, country, gospel. And so if you can get any answers, that's,
what was the question?
Great. Yeah, what was the question? Do you and your brother fight a lot?
Yeah.
Remember when you were in the Beatles? That was cool.
In the state of festivals, so, I guess.
So my knowledge of putting on festivals and concerts is, you know, massive risks. So they want to give themselves the best shot of selling a lot of shoes, you know, making profit. And they have targeted an audience. Now, whether that's Instagram hipsters at Coachella and, you know, like that kind of thing, or whether it's people who are into outlaw country and new wave of Southern rock, you know, I think people, there's some passion involved too, but unless there's business in there too, and like playing the tape through and go like, you know, like all these great rock things and rock cruises, and, you know, people have they're figuring out that business thing, because if they don't, man, you know, and there's many bands, you know, like veteran rock bands that will tell you they're making more better money now than in their prime, because you know, they're independent. They're not, you know,
as paying all the managers and agents and all this, like taking the chunk out, right?
Not having to pay back the record label for making the album that cost houses and houses and houses worth of money sometimes. So my understanding of, I mean, the music business is half business and half music, you know, and the festivals and stuff like that. I'm sure there've been, I don't want to call any of them out, but there's been some that you're like, that's not going to work, and it doesn't work. And, but you know, all these great rock things, like, they have one up in the, you know, it's just a bunch of different rock festival, you know, people are like, there's never any rock at Coachella, or, you know, Bonnaroo. There's some at Bonnaroo, but the thing I think you got to work, listen, like festivals, like the camping festivals, like Bonnaroo, they figured out now that there's more festivals where older motherfuckers like me can stay at a hotel on the beach and hang out instead of in a fucking tent for 4 days in summer in Tennessee. Which festival you think I'm going to go to? So they've targeted like a thing, like a camping thing like Bonnaroo has targeted. That's why it's all like dance music and rap and pop and shit, because that's what, you know, greasy kid stuff, because greasy kids are the only ones that are going to endure that, because they can, you know, get wasted, you know, in the land with no parents for 3 days. And it's all, a lot of it is that, you know, like, you know, tweaking to market, to target demographic, to what's available.
So it's all business.
Funds have.
Right.
To what, you know, I think a lot of it is that, man. And, but like you said, that makes total sense for those new Southern rock bands to be on a Outlaw Country Festival. Those people, you talk about the discovery, you know, how I also have, you know, back in my younger days would discover bands at festivals, the underground bands.
Yeah.
You know, or you're walking from one stage to the other and you're like, oh, that's pretty good. I think I'll stick around for it. You know, so I guess that would be another way sometimes to find new bands.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the bands we talk to do play the same festivals and things together, but it becomes more of a broad genre of like, hey, you can fit into a rock or a country festival or blues, whatever, which is honestly, if you're a touring band, the more widespread your audience or body audience, the better you're going to have a chance of making a living and doing it.
It's the definition of crossover, isn't it?
That is the definition of crossover.
So Jason, you mentioned earlier, the new wave of Southern rock, you know, like when, you know, we've all heard about the new wave of British heavy metal and they call it Nwabum.
Yeah.
I think we are seeing the new wave of Southern rock, Nwasser, you know, and I would say the new wave.
I love it.
The new trademark. Wave, we just trademarked that.
Yeah. It could be the new wave of American Southern rock, but Jason and I are coming across all these bands from the UK, same thing that's going on over there. So is this like a more of a, almost like a transatlantic new wave of Southern rock?
There are UK bands doing Southern rock.
Oh, which, yeah.
Dude, did I not send you the stuff? Did I not send you stuff about Doomsday Outlaw? If I didn't, I need to.
And they're just one. There's quite a few.
You sent me some stuff. I haven't committed it to the few megabytes left I have on my hard drive in my brain. But you've sent me some cool stuff. That is awesome. I think that's so cool that there would be Southern rock bands in the UK. Wow. They'll probably come up with a new little twist on it.
Southern and blues rock, and like I threw Doomsday Outlaw, they had a record come out earlier this year, and it's like if you took 70s Southern rock and with 80s hard rock sensibilities, I'll call it, like it's, I listened to it, I couldn't believe they were a British band first and foremost, and then we had to find out who they, we got them on the podcast a couple months ago because I had to talk to them, but like, yeah, blues bands are big. The American Southern rock bands go over there, do well. Like Robert John and the Wreck's been on tour over there. Whiskey Myers, Blackberry Smoke. Our friends in Jane Lee Hooker, a good blues rock band out of New York, is over there touring right
Mojo
now.
Mojo Thunder.
Cold Stairs, Mojo Thunder. There. The Cold Stairs are finishing a European tour. They play to bigger audiences over there than they do over here.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing that's been going on for a long time, is going back to Hendrix, had to go to England to get discovered after, you know, paying dues here. So, that's an interesting phenomenon. And again, that's cool that those bands have figured out and played to that, route to being viable as a long-term venture.
So, you've talked to a lot of cool people, had really cool interviews with a lot of artists this year. And honestly, I always, whatever story you come up with, I always enjoy it, whether it's Zeppelin, LA Guns, whatever. But
thank you.
For you, what are you seeing from like these, and we'll call them legacy acts right now? Because I'll tell you what, Monday night, I just saw Faster Pussycat in Columbus. They were killer. Like they put on a good show, still sounding good. You know, LA Guns has a new record out. They're touring. Like, where do the legacy acts right now fit in?
I think, so LA Guns and Faster Pussycat, in the cases of those, they've found some really good pieces to go around the central piece or pieces. Like with Faster, you have Sam.
Mm-hmm.
On guitar, and I forget the other gentleman's name.
It was a brand new younger kid, like those two, and they even joked about the show. Those guys' ages combined are less than Tammy Down's age.
That's great. Trophy wife of guitar players. But
trophy wife of guitar. Nice.
Stole that from Chris Robinson. He said that about Jackie Green.
Yep, I was just gonna say that.
So they have really good supporting players, the right ones. In the case of Tammy, different strokes for different folks, but he used to live pretty hard, and now he's got a lot healthier, and so he'll be able to not only perform better, make better decisions the next day when he wakes up, have the not run off people. I'm not saying he ever did, but people who live hard sometimes can run off some people.
Sure.
Who don't, want to be hit by that debris. In the case of LA Guns, they benefit from the fact that their original singer still sounds very, very good.
Right.
He
sounds amazing.
Yeah. I always use that thing. There's not a lot of slam dunk contest held for former NBA players that are now 60 or older, That hard rock style a lot of times, but for some, maybe he bathes in like virgin blood, Phil does, to keep that. But
we'll ask Ace that question, or Phil, if we ever get him on.
Yeah, please do. So they have him, and they have Tracy Guns. Tracy still can play really, really good. They've been inspired. And something that Phil mentioned is that making new music together has strengthened their friendship and like their bond, because they're building something new. It's not like as great it is to have those, classic LA Guns songs. They're not just sticking that in the microwave and cashing the check. They're like making new stuff, and they haven't gotten A&R guy who's beholden to a record label that's owned by a company that has stockholders, that is somebody's bitch to somebody else's bitch to somebody else's bitch. And, they make the kind of music they want to hear and they like. The supporting players they have, from like Ace, Von Johnson, the rhythm section is,
they're touring drummer. Is it Tony? I can't
Sean
remember. Sean, thank you, man. Talking to him the other day. Yeah,
and Johnny Martin on bass is just
solid,
like a total a tent pole for them. And I think they've figured out and have the right management how to make a living. Look, they're not ACDC. They don't have that kind of machinery behind them, and they don't generate, they don't print money like AC/DC does, but they've figured out how to make a, you know, how to do well. I think, you know, that's what I see is, you know, it's pretty combination of those factors, you know, taking care of yourself, having the right pieces where it sounds like the band, and having the pieces that are those pieces that still sound, you know, and I think making new music, you know, it makes it feel like not just like a museum or, you know, an exhibit. It's like
they sound like LA Guns, but it's still modern at the same time. Like it's not just a like museum type of music.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
Is there another band? So let's say on LA Guns, because Brian and I like love those guys, and we've gotten back into them with the last records. Is there a band that you can remember who's been out 30, 35 years that's making records that still are fresh and good and original? Like full records, like not just a song or two that's good, yeah, but like you're actually releasing full albums of good material.
LA Guns is one a lot of people who really know rock will say, this new Extreme record's pretty yeah, hot stuff.
Yeah.
Like the songs are good. It sounds like Extreme. They're stretching a little in some places. Mm-hmm. You know, they've always been like that. Gary can still sing his ass off.
Nuno can obviously still play.
Yeah. And Nuno has been inspired, I think, with Edward Van Halen's passing to, you know, really keep that energy going of hot shit guitar playing with soul and a sense of humor and a smile.
Yeah.
So that's one I think of. Those are the two that come to mind, and I'm sure there's more. I mean, there a lot of those bands are, you know.
But you don't normally see that, though. You don't see these bands who've been out 30, 35, approaching 40 years, put new material out where, like, again, conceptually, the album is a good album.
Tesla's done some good stuff. I think they've stuck more to singles. I think the last album they did was with Phil Collin.
Yeah, we don't talk about that around here.
Yeah, it kind of doesn't sound.
There's two good songs in there.
It's Def almost, Tesla. I call that Def Tesla, and we don't talk about that.
Yeah. I think,
but the singles are good,
it sounds like something else. But yeah, like the singles they've put out since then, a couple of the ones I've heard are very good, sound like Tesla. Like, and also, like, I think it's cool that in little moves, like, they just put out a live record, Tesla did. And Eddie Trunk asked him a really good question when Frank was, who's cool as shit, the guitar player from Tesla, on their new show they have on YouTube called That Rocks. With the that metal show guys, but he asked him, why did you guys do a single live album instead of a double album, because that's the normal chassis, right? And he's like, well, we wanted to not have anything we've had on here that was been on a previous live album, and little things like that I think are cool, you know. Like he was saying, you know, we don't want the fifth version or the third version of Signs, or so I think if even when bands can, I think that's smart. Okay, you think live album. Okay, they're just kind of think of a way to get out some product until they can come up with the next thing to bring in a larger amount of income. But if you're good and creative with the live album too, and just not, you know, I love Kiss, but putting the 10,000th version of Rock and Roll All Night, you know, on there, I don't know. It's, you know, I think also a lot of these legacy bands, they don't have shit to prove. They've been the toast of the town, and they've been the butt of the joke for 10 years in the 90s, a lot of them, most of them. And so they have perspective, like, you know.
But they're kind of cool again, to be honest with you. I know they were the butt of the joke, but I think that's 100%. Becoming cool again.
Yeah, they have, you know, and you see shows like the superhero thing Peacemaker. It was all cool 80s.
Yeah, it was all 80s. Hanoi Rocks and Choir Boy. I think Choir Boy, like, it was all that, like, even like the non-mainstream stuff was on it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that was, I think a lot of those songs what you'll also see is, okay, so normally a lot of the more creative things, now that I'm sure that had a good budget, but a smart move of those songs are good, like Choir Boys and, you know, Hanoi and all that stuff. But that shit was probably pretty affordable to license.
True.
You know, if I was a young, scrappy indie, you know, showrunner or filmmaker, or, you know, there's probably some bargains to be had, you know, and like you could do it with 90s stuff. I'm sure a Cry of Love track is a lot cheaper than a Pearl Jam or a Soundgarden or a Nirvana track to license, you know?
Yeah,
obviously.
For sure.
We should probably mention Tom Kiefer as well. So I know Jason's seen him like recently, I guess.
I saw Sonic Slam last year. It was LA Guns, Kiefer, and Pussycat.
Yeah, his band's really good. And it's Skinner's always been a big part. I think there's a very, okay, two underrated things about 80s hard rock. The Southern rock influence, you know, on the guitar playing and the songwriting, and the punk rock influence with the bass. There's a lot of punk rock bass players in those big rock bands, you know, Duff McKagan, Nikki Sixx. There's a whole line of them. And there's a lot of people like Tom who love Southern rock, the Almonds and Skynyrd. In his Tom Kiefer band, you know, he's got, you know, they had a keyboard player with Cinderella too, but they've got the chick background singers like the Honkettes from Skynyrd.
Yeah.
He's got, you know, hell of a band playing with him. And and he strikes a good mix, those live shows of the stuff from that last, you know, album and, you know, the songs people want to hear and the songs he has to play and the songs super fans will get jazzed to hear. It's, and, you know, that stuff's, he has some really good songs.
When you said punk and Southern rock, we have to mention Junkyard and Dangerous Toys too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wow. Love those bands. And, you know, I'm sure they had quite the experience being on major labels back in the day. Like didn't the singer from Dangerous Toys fill in for another big tour for
Jason,
like,
McMaster? He did, I think, Armored Saint and another band he filled in Armored for. Saint.
Boy.
Somebody else, when people became sick, he filled in. Yeah. I had a great, so I was at Rockin' Pod this year, and I had Jason McMaster on, and we had a fantastic conversation about blues and like the birth of rock. He was great. Like, it was one of the coolest conversations I ever had.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to chat with him. I'm still in that first Junkyard record. I still listen to on the regular. Like
my high school. I do too. Even Sixes, Sevens, and Nines, their second record that came out, is chock. Like, the whole album is really good. I love those guys. I always make Brian have Pat and Tim come on just because I love them. They're cool as shit.
Yeah, they're great.
Their music's cool. Yeah. And they took the Crows out for the first time. The Crows were really doing a little bit of a wide swing. They were the opener for Junkyard for a very brief time.
Those YouTube clips are very good. Of the Crows at that sort of rock club level.
Charlie Starr's a big Junkyard fan.
He wrote a song for him, and I'm blanking on it.
Till the Wheels Fall Off.
Yeah, Till the Wheels Fall Off. Yep. So a lot of cred there.
Who did you say was a big Junkyard fan?
Charlie Starr.
Yeah, he is. He is. Yeah, I think he likes Tesla and Cinderella.
Yeah,
he does too. Dude, I tell you what, Blackberry Smoke could kill a Tesla or a Cinderella cover too if they decide to play one.
Well, or, you know, do a tour with them, or
you can find a clip when they played Nashville that Tom Kiefer came out and they did Heartbreak Station and Brown Sugar.
Yep,
awesome.
God, this. So Matt, for you, I got two questions. We'll start with one first. What new bands have you heard of recently that are really exciting you?
Well,
you got any?
Yeah, the posted the video, I think today, of this band called the Dirty Janes.
And yep.
The singer has kind of a early Chris Cornell thing going on. There's some talent there. He plays a BC Rich Mockingbird, has, you know, kind of a...
The original Slash guitar, right? Slash played a Mockingbird. Wasn't that his number one, his first one?
He played that in Velvet Revolver too, though.
The rest of the band's solid. He's definitely, to me, the straw that stirs the drink. And you can tell there's something there. They're kind of raw. They need to get a little more polished on the performances and self-editing of the songs and stuff. And that's by far the best song, to my knowledge, that I've heard. Maybe I haven't heard the right stuff, but, you know, more songs like the one, I forget the name of it, but the one I posted is like, especially once they get, you know, when I talk about self-editing, like there's like a little jam in the beginning, but it doesn't really go anywhere. Like, cut that off. Like, and there's some jamming at the end that don't really go. It's like when the Crows used to jam a lot. I know Chris likes the Grateful Dead a lot, but they just weren't good at jamming, you know, like, you know, compared to like the Allman Brothers or like, you know, it's like when a guy who's more about driving to the basket keeps falls in love with the 3-point line, but it's not his game. It's like, dude, you're not a 3-point shooter.
Lot of bricks.
Yeah, Mark Ford could play, but the jams just didn't, you know, that's some people. I know the Crows have their jam period fans, but I was glad as fuck when they got out of it.
Well, and I'm a big fan of the By Your Side record, and I know a lot of those Crows fans who got in like the Three Snakes and One Charm or even the tail end of Amorica when they were doing the don't like that. I'm like, that's when I came back. I love Amorica. Three Snakes and One Charm's a little bit out there. I do. There's good stuff, but like, I love By Your Side. It's not a flaw. It's not a perfect album. Not even close to it. There's some sinkers, but it brought back like we're just gonna straight on punch you in the face with rock music again.
Doing what they're best at.
Doing what they're best at.
It's like
being aggressive.
I've seen that. I've said this before, but it's like, okay, so I'm an Alabama fan in college football, and it's been cool to see them stretch and learn how to do the passing game. But when it's like 3rd and 1, you're like, run the fucking ball. Run
you do, the yeah. ball. Power.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Same thing. That is a good comparison. I like
you
it.
That's a phenomenon in the rock thing I call playing hide and go seek from yourself. Like avoiding what you're best at because you don't want to, you're overly concerned about repeating yourself or you think it'll make you more artistic. Sometimes stretching out works and sometimes when it does, but you know, the key is to know when to pull back in and, you know, but like if the Crows do another album, I would be shocked if it's not straight Southern Harmony meets, you know, Shake Your Money Maker with maybe a dollop of Amorica weirdness, but you know, I doubt there would be like Three Snakes, you know,
when
you're not alone kind of.
Well, that's what Chris said. He's fallen in love with just straight on rock music and guitar rock again, and that's what he wants to do. And my fingers are crossed too that they go that direction, play it, and don't do any of this kind of weird stuff like you said.
And hell of a rock singer, and his brother can write some damn riffs and play them, so and it's, you know, as much as I would like to see the, you know, the surviving members of the, you know, the Southern Harmony and Amorica, the Three Snakes lineup back, the fact is if you saw those shows, they were really fucking good.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, no other guitar player will ever be Mark Ford.
Nope.
But the magic is the singing and the songs and the attitude. And as long as you have Chris and Rich And Chris, another guy whose voice still sounds pretty damn good. And
right,
he's, you know, not going out there, you know, tripping on acid anymore or whatever. But like,
high, he's not doing as much pot or acid or cocaine.
Right. Or at least before the show. But
at least before the show.
But they picked the right guys. They have the right management. They're, you know, not, you know, they're making smarter moves now. Like we talked about doing stuff for exposure with, like, you know,
Darius Rucker.
So I'd love to see, and I heard they were working with George Drakoulias. Mm-hmm. Again,
that's a rumor. Yeah, that's what we hear.
And they've shared pictures of working with George, Chris and Rich, like songwriting and stuff, but like on social media pictures and stuff. But, you know, another great, I can't take credit for this, but I was watching, not to like, you know, drop Eddie Trunk's name too much, but I was watching the latest episode of their
with Extreme. Yeah.
And they're talking about how Guns N' Roses has just done this tour for 8 years and no new album. And he's mentioned something that I don't think, and I swear his insights have been better on this than his radio shows or his, or that metal show. But he says, okay, you only got it for a tour. You only got to get along for, you know, 3 hours a night. And it's fun and everybody's there. But if you're making an album that's 12-hour days in a little room or a building, and it's opinions and it's creativity and
ego,
ego, 100%. Whereas tour, it's just like, we're just, you know, it's fun.
Guns N' Roses, and Eddie said, or those guys said it, like, they make so much money, separate buses, separate hotel rooms, separate planes. They only see each other for the 2.5-3 hours on stage.
And so why, like he said, why risk blowing? I mean, God, holy shit, man. Like that first run of that, you know, Duff, Axl, and Slash, you know, Tri-Union, Not in This Lifetime. I have never seen a line at the merch like that. Like,
oh, really?
Insane. Like, blows every other, and lots of, I mean, it was insane. God knows how much they make on merch each time.
More than they're making on new record sales.
Well, why?
And also,
what happens if you're Guns N' Roses and you go through all that? There's the risk of the things. Ego, creative. I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to make AC/DC music. I want to make experimental music. You know, and you do that and say, okay, that's the risk. Is that F you, I hate you. F you, this is why I stopped working with you in 96. You know, like, but like with the touring and stuff like that, there's no risk that, like you said. And say you do get through that in the studio and nothing, it doesn't all blow up. Guess what? It's 2023. And it's, unless you're Taylor Swift or, you know, Beyonce, not a lot of people selling a lot of records, you know, you know, even big legendary rock acts, when they put out a record now, you look at those weekly sales, especially after the first week when all the super fan completists go out there to get the shit, like the next week you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, you sell a million records now, it's incredible. It's like a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, even back that last Aerosmith record, I mean, fucking Aerosmith, like, and this was several years ago, and if it went gold barely. Like, and we're talking about a band that's had been multi-platinum for a long time.
Well, since Permanent Vacation, right? They had that whole run all the way to where we are now.
Through the 90s. But yeah. The risk versus the reward. So high risk of, like, you know, taking your golden ticket and just like lighting it on fire, to risk it for what? To say, whereas there's a much less of a risk when some the bands on a different tier now at this part of their career to do an album.
And because Guns N' Roses, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, because I think they have more to gain and less to risk.
Well, do you think it helps too that the fact you've got Slash, who does stuff with Miles Kennedy and other people, where he's creating original music, and Duff has his solo projects where he's creating original music. They don't mind going out for that huge payday, paying the old stuff, because they are doing these side gigs, making new stuff.
I would think that would really help balance things. Yeah, that's a good insight. Or even just one song, and not just, okay, these are leftover tracks from Chinese Democracy that we're gonna take out the,
and they weren't that good. Chicken, I mean,
Kentucky,
I didn't like them.
Chicken guitar player and
Buckethead.
He was an amazing guitar player, but
he is.
There's not how many people at GNR shows are wearing Appetite shirts, and how many are wearing Chinese Democracy shirts?
Yeah.
And there's some good stuff on that album, but I mean, it's, do you want to live in an okay house or have five awesome houses?
It's the best of both worlds. You're making a gajillion dollars with the Guns N' Roses stuff, and you have the freedom and the non-risk to do your side gigs with Miles Kennedy or solo stuff. Best of both worlds.
I love that last, the Slash 4, very raw sounding. A couple of really good, solid record, but there's a couple of really good songs on there.
Miles Kennedy's a talent, man.
He is a super nice guy, well adjusted. Like he's the anti lead singer LSD, lead singer disease, because he's so nice and like doesn't think the, that's the reason, people are like, well, why are lead singers so crazy? It's because very beautiful women sometimes really crazy because everybody's kissing their ass. It'd make me crazy too.
But to get the cream of the top crop though, you're a different personality, you're different from people too, right? Like that's just a separation of like normal folk, like the three of us talking versus celebrity, sports star, rock star. Other than the talent.
They have something that's accessible and that connects with a lot of people, which is a hell of a power, but also a unique thing, that's their own thumbprint. Like I was watching, I think from the 96 or 98 Stone Temple Pilots tour, and holy shit.
You just posted that, didn't you?
Weiland's a wild card, but he and those other guys are so steady players and so good, and one guitar band too. And Dean DeLeo's just nailing every single note, covering rhythm and lead. So they were so strong of a platform for Weiland, even, if he's missing a couple of notes, he just had so much character and charisma and the fact of the matter is, I've said this before, what was the last dangerous rock band? And a lot of that danger is alluring. Danger will kill your ass or drive people around you crazy.
It's the unpredictability, right? That's what you're talking about, part of the danger is like, you don't know if they're going to show up. You don't know if they're going to get in a fight with each other or someone in the audience.
Yeah. And it's a pain in the ass sometimes when you have to wait 3 hours for fucking Axl Rose to go on stage in 1991. But I can't speak to it. I'm sure he had.
So you're saying who's a dangerous band right now? I don't.
What was the last dangerous band? Dangerous.
Guns N' Roses? I mean, honestly, because they were sort of the tail end of that LA rock, hard rock scene. And
Jane's Addiction was pretty dangerous too, I would say.
Pretty good. I think Stone Temple Pilots only because of Scott Weiland, because you don't know what you're going to get with them, right? And their music still had a little bit of that rough punk edge about it. Now, they weren't near as dangerous as Guns N' Roses, where you had everybody in the band was kind of, you didn't know what you were going to get. But I think maybe STP.
I mean, when fucking Weiland was getting arrested, even when they were making the goddamn Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
He
his golden chance to at a second chance that, you know.
Second again, chance. He had about 50 of them.
For another band very big stars, you know, Slash and Duff. And
those Velvet Revolver records were good. They were good records, man. I liked them. I was going to ask you the Velvet Revolver records. Both of those were good. You're a guitar player. Going back to Stone Temple Pilots, you ever try to play some Stone Temple Pilots stuff?
Okay, so the last bands that I haven't really tried to play other people's songs in a long time. I started playing guitar really late, like 19. So I went, besides like the guys who drew me in, which were Jimmy Page, Slash, Rich Robinson, Keith Richards, Mick Taylor, you know, that mix. I learned their shit and I learned some other stuff from that era and some, you know, other bands from that era. But then I read a thing by Jimmy Page. He says, if you want to learn how to play like me, learn how to play like my influences. So I got really into blues. So in the 90s, when everybody was doing either alternative bands or
all power chords
or doing jam bands, I was playing in blues bands, which was, you know, early 20s, white dudes playing blues wasn't exactly a moneymaker, but it was important. Sometimes sometimes in life you want to do something different. Like you're talking about Brian, like in the underdog bands, you know, you don't want to follow. And eventually, I went to New Orleans and played in original bands there, started them and led them and, you know, made some original solo records too. But again, there came to a point where it's like, my friends are starting to have houses. Some of them have lake houses. I'm living in a crappy apartment. My bass player is on heroin. Another person in my life is addicted to crack. And then someone suggests, hey, you know a lot about rock. Maybe you should write about it. And cashed in a connection I had from a creative writing class to start writing for an alt weekly. And it clicked, felt good, pursued it. So I haven't learned, you know, the Crows. I learned some early Crow stuff when I started. And that's would be the last. I did learn a couple of White Stripes songs because
there you go.
They
the bluesy parts of them, whether it was and Bomb Arts, Biscuit or.
And artsy, like, you know, that's the thing about. They had that mystique, like the Black Keys seems like dudes that you could have been in like high school with, but no mystique. And Pat's funny as shit to talk. I've interviewed him, the drummer from the Keys. Dan's okay to chat with. Hell of a singer. Chicks love the Black Keys. It's because he's a fucking good singer. But the mystique of the Stripes were, I think, what I liked about them.
That was a long no.
that's the equal to the long question Ryan asked her.
Yeah, that's true. Where I was going with that, Matt, is I've played some Stone Temple Pilots song, and like, and if you're a guitar player, like, yeah, easy, or, you know, reasonable. All of a sudden, Dean DeLeo throws in a jazz chord or two, and you're like, how the fuck am I supposed to finger like fret this one? Like Interstate Love Song, I love that song. I can play all that song, but there is a effed up weird variation of an F or F sharp chord that's jazz, and I can't finger it right 10 years later. So those bastards, they throw that in because you think it's easy and there's something tricky about it,
and that's part of their magic. They have that classic rock thing with a little alternative.
Their own sound. It's that jazz. They've got a jazz, very much a jazz influence.
And I've had the pleasure of interviewing Dean before. And if I remember correctly, a lot of that jazz chord thing comes from Robert, the bass player, who wrote a lot of those riffs and chord progressions.
Yeah. But dude, I'm telling you, it's like, oh yeah, I got this. And you're like, what is this? And how do I do it? And do I need two hands to fret this? What are you doing here?
And that's funny because when I do see a band cover STP, there's always a part where they get, I'm like, that's not the right chord.
It's not the right, yeah.
They played the right riff, but they didn't get the chord.
Yeah, for sure. That's funny. I got one last question for you, because I know you had limited time for us, but what's been your favorite article that you've written this year for any of your platforms, Guitar World, AL.com, or anything else? Because you've done stuff on Zeppelin, stuff on Vito Bratta, like all these different things.
Two that haven't come out yet. I'll tell you three. One is an extended interview with Jack Russell, the original singer from Grateful Dead. Yeah.
Speaking about blues influence, hard rock.
And he still sounds good. I don't know all the shit he's been through, man. And talking to that guy, and looking into his eyes over Zoom and all he's been through, and talking about music and not asking about, you know, shit that people have asked him about already. Like, I really like that one that's coming out soon on Metal Edge. We've got something coming out for a Guitar World with Vernon Reed from Living Color. Oh.
One of my favorites and one of my favorite bands.
Oh, such a badass band, man. Like,
speaking of not being able to play his shit, like, good luck. I don't care how good of a guitar player you're on. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't even try that shit, man. But like, so cool, funny, insightful.
He's a geek. Like, I follow him on Twitter, and like, he talks about Marvel and Star Wars. Like, not only just music, he's a guy I would absolutely die to get on the podcast, just because the non-music conversations would be incredible.
Unique cat, talented. The third thing is, I've got a thing coming out for Guitar Player. I tracked down, it took me like 6 years to track her down. She was a 20-year-old seamstress in Los Angeles who made, you know, Jimmy Page's dragon white suits. I tracked down the girl who made those. Her name's Coco. She now lives in Ibiza, and she has some,
like, that's Spain stuff. Right, peninsula in Spain, Ibiza, right? Yes,
island maybe. But my geography sucks.
Mine too, obviously.
But she and you know, she went on tour with Zeppelin for a year, so she has Zeppelin.
Was story. She the seamstress?
Zeppelin
for
stories
the band?
That will melt your ear, brother.
So, seamstress for the band and Tiny Dancer, is that the lyric about her or what?
She's never she loves that song, but she doesn't think it's about her. But she's never seen Almost Famous, and I was like, you have to watch Almost Famous.
How could somebody who had that, like, not see that?
Probably because why watch something when you
lived it?
It's like my attitude on, and my sister had it, like, okay, so I'm 51, so my 10-year high school reunion, I really wanted to go. And that was kind of before social media really was easier to keep up. Everybody found their old friends or people they knew from earlier in their life. And now I can see what people are up to that way. So I have no urge to ever go to another high school reunion and endure any of the people I don't want to endure, because anybody I care about, I know, I know that they've got a new grandkid or a new, their daughter's going to college, or like they've got a new puppy or cat, like, you know, so yeah, I don't know where that was going, but.
Basically, if you've lived that life, you don't need to go back and watch a replica of that occur.
Yeah, exactly. Why would she lived Almost Famous, but I hope she watched it.
But that's such a good movie. I mean, that's such an incredible movie. Soundtrack, all, like, it's, but I get it. If you lived it, you don't need to see the fictional version of that life.
the thing that when it first came out, I was disappointed because there's all this buzz, Cameron Crowe, 70s rock movie. I was like, man, this is so not. When you're younger, in young adulthood, sometimes you get hung up on edginess. Like, man, they'd all be doing blow or shooting up, like, because that's how it was.
Right.
But, okay, I think of a movie around that same time where they did depict that. Boogie Nights. You know, they're doing blow and shooting up and all. That's my cat, Ziggy Stardust.
What up, Ziggy? It's a nice looking orange cat.
But I never rewatch Boogie Nights because all that shit, I don't want to, it's like, you know, but I rewatch Almost Famous all the time. And it, so I think where I thought he got it wrong, Cameron Crowe, he got it right. Time has proven he got it right.
But it's not that type of movie to show like the dark edges. It's, you know what I mean? That's not the theme of the movie. So I don't, that wouldn't have added anything to the movie, right? It would only have been a detriment, I think, to the theme or the feel.
Sometimes realism isn't the best entertainment.
And there's Ellie Mae. We have another animal guest of the podcast, Brian's. I've got dogs and cats around here somewhere. I just, you know, they're old. They're hanging out.
We should let them talk. They'd probably be more interested than us.
Well, Marc Maron, so... Almost Famous is one of my all-time favorite movies from everything. Again, I love the music of that era, but there are so many spit parts and cameos. You know, have you ever listened to Marc Maron's podcast? Speaking of podcasts.
I'm not a fan.
Okay. All right.
I heard him interview Slash one time. It was literally, and I know
he, painful?
Maybe he was doing it because he has a big audience and he thought he has to dumb it down. But it was like, if you have done any research on Slash, you need the answer to every one of the questions. And I was like, man, you know how many people would love to interview Slash right now that would
ask him something different. Yeah.
Or ask him good questions. So, and maybe I just watched that one. And after that, I was like,
fuck. I've not seen that one. I probably haven't listened in a while, but I did. But where I'm going with this is, the very beginning of this podcast, like there, you can hear somebody scream like "Lock the gates!" It's Marc Maron, and that's from his role in Almost Famous, where the guitar player gets electrocuted on stage. They grab everybody and leave early. The bus is leaving. He's the promoter. He tells them "Lock the gates," and like they bust through. So I'm like, that's where that soundbite clip from Marc Maron's podcast was from.
That's him. Wow. I don't know if I had that before.
I did, and then Jimmy Fallon's character takes, like, he's a little much. That takes me out. All right, Brian, sorry, well, I talked over you.
It's more an observation, and when you mentioned, Matt, when you mentioned, you know, not asking, you know, your guests, you know, the typical questions, you know, talking about Jack Russell and what everybody probably asked him about, but now, did you talk to Scotty Hill or Snake from Skid Row?
Yeah, I've done Snake and I've done Rachel.
Yeah, okay. And of course, everybody asks them the obvious question and you didn't. And that's what's great about you. You don't ask cookie cutter questions. Well, that's a good influence for us because we try to do the same.
You know, there are some things that you need to ask about, but you want to ask them maybe a facet that hadn't been asked before, you know, yeah, there's an art to making it accessible, but making it smart and also winning them over, you know, and, you know, knowing, you know how it is.
I mean, seriously,
you guys have done so many interviews, you know.
Your interview with him.
We try.
Any notification that I ever see on anybody, Snake or Scotty Hill or any of those guys, always like, oh, Sebastian Bach. Like every interview except you. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I mean, I don't think there's anything more. And I've interviewed Sebastian before, and he was great. But, you know.
Can they say that they haven't said 1,000 times, right?
Yeah. And but I will ask about the music they made together.
Sure.
Fuck yeah, I will. But I don't have to, you know. So when was the last time you and Sebastian played ping pong? Or Sebastian, when was the last time Snake sent you a Christmas card? I mean, it's what could those answers are out there.
And I think the subjects appreciate that because those are questions that they don't normally get. It's not boring, you know, it's like we're having a normal conversation.
Well, then, and you want to, people like to be appreciated, and it sounds stupid. People appreciate being appreciated.
Yeah.
And part of that is doing some research, you know, trying to, you know, find things that people love about them, but maybe also find out a reason people love them, but maybe they don't realize, or something cool about their story that hadn't been done, told to death, or it's, God, man, these, I tell you what, guys, it's gotten, I like to read a lot, and which is words out, you better put words in. But the further in life I go, it's gotten harder for me to read anything besides rock books, because those people have lived such an eventful and exciting and, you know, often dramatic life, that like anything else at this point is so boring to me. But part of that is, you know, and to get a small part in helping some of these guys, their story get out there in a more complete or better way. Like, I just think of like how many times I used to like drive around in my 82 Silver Accord listening to the first LA Guns album, and I've got the opportunity to help Phil or Tracy, you know.
Tracy loves you.
He's a cool guy. In my experience with him, you know.
Yeah, he's a fan, man. I see all the stuff. He's definitely a fan.
I'm a fan of his, man. Like, when somebody, you've enjoyed their music, when it's good, it's good, you know. We all have probably some stories where it's not that way, but, you know, and who knows. But, yeah, Tracy's a cool guy. And, you know, he's happy. He's making good music. He's happy. So
he's in a good spot. I just saw he finished doing another
Sundown.
Michael Stryper. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's another great guy.
Well, he's doing the record with, and the guy's name is escaping me, that plays in Slash's band.
Miles Kennedy?
No, the guitar.
Todd Kearns, Blackbird.
Yeah, Todd, damn it, Kearns.
It's got a really cool name that I can't think of. It's Blackbird something or not.
Blackbird Angels. I've heard some songs.
There you go. That's a freaking cool name.
Aerosmithy.
Yeah, I bet.
Early
Zeppelin. Can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, you'll like it. It's right up your jam. Well, guys, this has been cool.
Thanks. Yeah, we appreciate you coming in. And always, there's always a good excuse to talk to you, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to do that, and you hopped on here.
Well, yeah, thanks for thanking me, and I appreciate the kind words. It means a lot, and for you know, I really thank you for that. But yeah, unless you guys have anything else you want to rap about, I guess I'll go.
Promote yourself, right, Brian? Like, where can people find your work? Because you're all over the place, and honest to God, like, if you like rock journalism, there's not really much better out there than what you're doing, Matt.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say, and I'll wire you the money via Venmo after that.
Just keep providing ethical journalistic advice when I text you.
Okay. You got it, man. Okay. So I mentioned the guitar player, the Metal Edge, and the Guitar World stuff. Another one that I'm excited about, I'm lucky enough to have a staff job, which means if you're freelancing the whole time and writing, you have to work three times as hard for the same amount of money. So I'm lucky to have a staff job that I do work hard on. I also do this freelancing stuff, but it's with AL.com, which is the largest media outlet in Alabama. Used to be the website for the Birmingham News, Mobile Press Register, Huntsville Times. Print's gone now. But anyway, I get a lot of cool interviews from that. I've got one. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Los Angeles punk band called X from the late 70s.
Yeah. Yep.
First four records were produced by Ray Manzarek from The Doors. Interviewed their singer, Exene Cervenka. I think I'm saying Exene's last name right. That'll be on AL.com soon. And I get to do some really cool stuff with them, partly because the Orion Amphitheater has brought, you know, some cool people here. But so, yeah, check me out on AL.com. Follow me on Twitter, Matthew B. Wake. That's where I do most of my rock and roll keyboard capping. And that's not in stories. It's check me out. I have some stuff coming up on Metal Edge and Guitar World and Guitar Player too. So
yeah, man, like, listen, people are checking out the podcast Matt's been on before, but I'm telling you, if you like rock music, whether it's new people, legacy acts or whatever, Matt's your guy. You're like Howard Stern, where I may not be interested necessarily in the person or subject talking about, but I always enjoy the interview because you've got a way with words. So we appreciate you being on with us.
Wow. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on, man. It means a lot to us.
Hey, man, thanks for those. Very sincerely appreciated. Great to see you guys. Great to talk.
Thanks to our buddy Matt for coming in and filling a seat when we needed to.
He pinch hit. And as we said, he had a triple and probably got home on an overthrow of the bag. So,
yeah.
What a great dude.
Nice surprise. Great dude. I enjoy, especially, like, just his take on the music business. It's not cookie cutters, especially when we were talking about when his interviews, he doesn't ask Skid Row about Sebastian Bach. He doesn't ask Jack Russell about the Fire. You know, he's just got a better original. I don't know. He's a great interview.
Conversation. And his approach is, I think, what you and I often try to do is, we're talking to people we have on, like fans or just like sitting around having a casual conversation. You and I aren't journalists. We're not trying to get a story, really? You know, it's just right. Yeah. Surprise everybody. Brian and I aren't actually journalists outside of podcasting, but it's nice just to sit and have a conversation. And that's kind of why I enjoy his interviews so much, because they're, as you described.
I'm glad you thought of Matt too earlier. I'm like, hell yeah. Like, that just made my day, you know. Not that my day was bad, but that made my day even more. It's just always just a hoot.
Again, great insights to the music business. He's going to bring up stuff. You know, we had a great conversation. Like, we're talking about Guns N' Roses and Stone Temple Pilots, and we're talking about LA Guns, and we're talking like whatever came up. And this is Brian. That's what you and I would exactly be doing if we're hanging out with Matt somewhere at a coffee shop or a bar.
Yeah. And through this, chat with Matt, out of the blue came Nawasser.
Yes. Trademark you.
The new wave of Southern rock. Nawasser.
And it's true. There is a new wave of Southern rock. Every time we turn around, there's another great band, whether it's the Dirty Gospel, One for the Road, some of our stalwart bands that we love, you know, Mojo Thunder. It's every time we turn around, Brian, there's another good act.
So thank you to all our friends and bands that create Nawasser. Thanks to Matt for coming on again, brother. We love you. And always remember, Southern rock is irreverent. Blues is blood. We'll see you next time.